Hey guys, Ron Placone here. You are listening to the Indie Bohemians, and we have a special show today, doing something a little different that I'm excited to report. Taking a different approach today, and it's in honor of a couple things. First of all, it's in honor of some of the new news. I don't know why I say that. I say that more than I should because it sounds stupid coming out of my mouth, but I say it nonetheless. First of all, we got two new affiliates I want to give a nice shout-out to. This is on the terrestrial dial, WLRI in Pennsylvania, who, by the way, great social media presence. I love that station. I love the folks there. I appreciate all their tweets. Not only do they support Indie Bohemians, they support the other shows that I am a very proud contributor to as well. They support the Jimmy Dore Show, and they support the Stephanie Miller Show. Both shows I am proud to be a contributor to. So I really appreciate that station and everything they do. And also, out in California, KPPQ, thank you so much for carrying Indie Bohemians. Happy to have you as one of our stations, one of our affiliates. And you know what? It feels a little good to finally have a California affiliate. That is our first California affiliate. I've been living in Los Angeles for almost a year now. It'll be a year in April. I've been here a hot minute. No California affiliates. It's not easy to get on the dial in a place like California, especially in the more concentrated areas. Now I do get to be on a lot of Los Angeles stations via the other shows I'm on. I mean, Jimmy's on KPFK, Steph's on a talk station as well in Los Angeles, so I get to do that. But as far as Indie Bohemians being on a California affiliate, this is the first one, which makes me feel good. Really makes me feel like, yeah, this is home. You know, and every now and again, you meet some people, you tell them you run a media operation. And where are you on? And it's like, well, you know what? It's weird. I'm not on the dial in California yet. I'm still working on that. Still trying to. And they kind of give you this look. Well, guess what? Those looks are going away on the dial in California now. Try that on for size, huh? On the dial. And to all the. Well, never mind. I'm not going to get into that. There was this one online affiliate that gave me some weird runaround about why they wouldn't carry it. And to them, huh, didn't need ya. Only wanted you to have the California name on our title and didn't need ya anyway. Got a better California affiliate. Now I'm sounding a little bitter, so I'm going to dismount this. KPPQ, wonderful to have you on board. WLRI, wonderful to have you on board. That online affiliate I will not name. Best wishes. I'm turning over a new leaf. I'm trying to be. So what we're going to do today, in honor of those new affiliates, we're going to revisit one of my favorite episodes from the vault when I got to talk to Billy Bragg. And there's another reason we're doing this too. You know, the world at large is a mess, as we all know. And, you know, Billy and I talked about a couple things. We talked about the concept of socialism, which now more than ever, that term is never used properly in contemporary American society. And thanks to Bernie Sanders, now that term is kind of being immigrated. We have democratic socialism now. That's a thing that we're really starting to hammer. That's a thing that's kind of developing a brand in mainstream America, which, in my opinion, is long overdue, but it's finally starting to gain some footing thanks to the gasoline Bernie poured on what was a much smaller movement. So me and Billy talked about that a couple years ago before Bernie Sanders did what he did, and we talked about just how that concept is so marginalized in the United States, mostly because of misinterpretation, fear, and propaganda. And the analogy Billy made you'll get to hear it, but the analogy he made essentially was, you know, when you say football in England, it means something different than if you say football in the United States. Same kind of concept. And I thought that was a fun analogy that he made. And, you know, also, I took a little flack for this when it initially aired. And you know, maybe you'll share this opinion. I don't know. But I got an email. It was just one email. It was just one dude. But he called me a sycophant. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. He called me a sycophant, which I've never been called that before. So I was like, why is he calling me that? Because of my interview. Now, to recap some of what happened, this interview took place in Nashville. It was when the show was still based out there. It was at the Americana Music Festival, a music festival I really love going to every year. I love covering it. I got some great interviews from that festival. And I would still be going every year if I still lived in Nashville. Really cool music festival. Billy Bragg did it. I believe it was 2015. It was either 2014 or 2015. I'm pretty sure. It wasn't this past year. It doesn't matter. But Billy Bragg was there and finally scored an interview with the guy. And it was right after. I mean, I'd been approaching him every day, just like, hey, Billy, I went to every event that he did. And just really, you know, and Rob Reinhardt of Acoustic Cafe, the syndicated radio show. I went to their interview. That was where I met Rob for the first time. We've been friends since. Perhaps you remember his interview on the show. We geeked out about radio in a cafe for a while. It was just two radio nerds geeking out about radio for a long time. And I think we cleared the place, if I remember correctly. But it was a fun talk. I love Rob. And that was where I met him for the first time, when he interviewed Billy on a show. They did a live broadcast. Approached Billy every single time, trying to get an interview. And finally, at the end, right before the bus was leaving, Billy sat down with me for 10 minutes. And it was really fun to chat with him, really fun to get to pick his brain a little bit. And we talked about this show. And just prior, he had done his last performance of the day, of the festival, which was at Grimey's in Nashville, great record store. And it was right outside. All the dudes from Wilco, except, of course, Tweety wasn't there. But the rest of the dudes from Wilco, I'm pretty sure, were all there. They were standing about 5 feet away from him, and so was I. He was just on the ground, just him and electric guitar, just rocking out. It was Billy Bragg. I could have reached out and just given him a high five. I didn't do that because, you know, he was by himself. He couldn't really, he didn't have any free hands. But I wanted to, and then he just decided, on a whim, he's like, you know what, I'm just going to play my first album in its entirety. So 5 feet away from Billy Bragg, and what felt like I was just in a living room, or a driveway rather, because technically it was essentially Grimey's driveway, Billy Bragg plays Spy vs. Spy in its entirety. It was beautiful. So yeah, I was a little geeked out. I was a little like, this is really cool. I'll probably remember this show for the rest of my life. This is one I'm not going to forget. You have those concerts, don't you? You have those shows that you know you're going to hold on to for the rest of your life, that you know you're not going to let go of. And I have that handful. The first time I saw Rancid, I will never forget that. It was technically my first punk show. And man, they're still one of the best live acts I've ever seen. I've seen them like 3 or 4 times since. They are phenomenal live. If you get a chance to see Rancid, do it. And I had a swagger in school the next day. I had a strut. I was like, look, I just saw something that most of my classmates in my little Catholic school had no idea what any of that was. But I did, and man, I just felt like I knew this beautiful secret. And even some of the kids that would tease me for liking that kind of thing. You know, punk rock's not the most... That's not necessarily what the cool kids do. And of course, my middle school was no different. Of course, a middle school, especially a middle school in the suburbs. But man, I didn't care. I was like, it sucks that you guys don't get it, but I'm happy at the party. And I was for a long time. Still am. Still am. And that being said, some housekeeping. I'm doing a music set. I'm going to be doing a music set. Because you know, sometimes you need to express yourself through different mediums, and in our climate, is anyone buying this? All right, I'm just going to be honest, I want to impress my girlfriend. That's it. I'm doing a music show because I want to impress my girlfriend, but I'm doing it nonetheless. For any Los Angeles folk, I will be at the Old Town Pub in Pasadena on Monday, March the 6th. Also, if you're hearing this on the broadcast day, which would be February the 23rd, Thursday, and you're in Los Angeles, I will be at Muse tonight at 8 p.m. Show kicks off at 8 p.m. Over at Muse in the kind of Hollywood-y, Beverly Hills-ish area. Come on out, say hello. That place is called Muse on 8th. Come on out. And also, March the 6th, I will be playing at the Old Town Pub in Pasadena. kicks off, I believe, around 7 p.m., and I'll be doing a music set. I'll be playing some songs. I'll definitely be playing a couple Billy Bragg covers. I won't be really playing any original music. I'll be playing music that matters to me, music that helps me cope with what's going on in the world, music that gets me through our bizarre contemporary society, our bizarre contemporary times. Bizarre is a very delicate and nice way to put it, but that just happens to be where my mind's going at this particular moment. So, yeah, come on out. And romplicone.com for all the latest updates. My tour in April is almost confirmed. As far as where I'll be going and when I'll be going there. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we're coming. Mentor, Ohio, we're coming. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, we're coming. And by we, I mean me and Patrick Cunningham, very funny comic out of Huntsville, Alabama. Our comedy tour is called Morrissey's Favorite Bacon, which is such a goofy name for a comedy tour. And Krish Mohan, a friend of the show who does our Fork for Noodles segment, he's totally not hip to music at all, so I had to explain to him what that meant. He's like, so what does that mean? Huh? And I was like, I know you don't know. Of course you don't know. But I explained it to him, and now he knows. But anyway, we're coming. Knoxville, Tennessee, we're coming. And we're still waiting to hammer in a few more dates. Anderson, South Carolina, we're coming. And still a few more dates to fill. If you're in that area, want to see us come to you, hit me up, romplicone.com, hit me up. We still got a couple dates to fill on that run. Not all the dates are confirmed, and we have a couple different towns we're considering. So, if you're in that area, want to see us, let me know. We'll make it happen. Romplicone.com for all the latest updates. Drop me a line, say hello, and yeah, enjoy revisiting this with me. I thought it was time. You know, I'm really happy about some new affiliates joining the family. Want to get some more? You want to carry our show? Let me know. You know, we're always looking for more affiliates. We love having y'all on board. And you know, for those of you that are podcast listeners, you know, of course, this is great. We appreciate the podcast as well, and all of the online networks that carry it. And so yeah. Enjoy this trip down memory lane with me, and you know, I kind of see a few connections as to what is going on now. I'm Ron Placone, and you're listening to the Indie Bohemians.
So I'm here with Billy Bragg, and you know, I gotta say real quick, it's not often that you see a show and you think, okay, I'll remember that for the rest of my life. But this show was one of them, and this is the first time I've ever been able to say thank you to the artist, so thank you for that. That was a phenomenal show.
Well, I
enjoyed it. Life's a Ride in its entirety.
Yeah, but it's only 17 minutes long. It's not like I can usually snick it out.
Sure, but you know, how often are you going to see something like that? It was very special. Have you had a good festival here at the Americana Fest?
Yeah, really great time. I mean, the Americana Music Association have been so hospitable, inviting me to come over, showing me, you know, not just what all the amazing stuff that they're doing, but connecting me with people, giving me the opportunity to do a show with Roseanne Cash and Richard Thompson. And I've just had the best time, yeah. My feet haven't touched the ground, but I've had a great time.
Sure. Now, on your website, you have a quote, and I'm pretty sure this is direct. It says, it's time to have a revolution and cut out the middleman.
Start your own revolution.
Start your own revolution and cut out the middleman.
Waiting for the Great Leap Forward, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you expand on that in your own words?
Well, you know, when I first started out, in order to get the word out about my music, I used to have to rely on the newspapers and the radio. You know, I'd have to get my record played on the radio. I would have to get my interview into the music papers. I'd have to get my records into the shops. I was, you know, one, two or three steps removed from the actual people who were getting into what I was doing. Now, because of the internet, I'm able to speak to people only one step removed from you, Ron. I mean, the people that are watching this now, they're just one step away from you. You are facilitating me speaking to people out there who are, you know, vaguely interested in what I'm doing. And that's a real sort of complete step change from how it used to be, and the gap between the artist and the fan is now so narrow that it's possible not only for me to communicate directly, you know, through Twitter and Facebook and through blogs, but also to sell stuff directly through my website. And that allows me to be able to make a living without selling millions of records.
So, in terms of activism, you know, someone that's been socially conscious your whole career, do you feel that we're in an easier place to spread messages, to raise awareness?
I think so, because before I had to rely on newspapers and radios, and if they thought about me that I was a bit political, they wouldn't put me on the air, they wouldn't put me in their paper. Now, with the internet, I'm able to reach out beyond that, you know, get retweeted, have my blog spread around and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, it is much more accessible. But at the same time, the audience is disparate. In the old days, when there wasn't so much media, everything used to be focused on, you know, the NME, John Peel on Radio 1. So if you hit big there, you could reach a lot of people. Now it's disparate, so you have to talk to a lot more people, but ultimately I think you have the ability to reach more people through social media. And that in turn allows people to facilitate their own activism without having to rely on a party or a committee or any kind of filter.
Now, you mentioned something yesterday that I wanted to ask you about. I believe it was in the Acoustic Cafe interview where you said how, similar to what you just said, sometimes people just kind of get scared or write you off when they hear, like, oh, a political singer, a political. And I'm a comedian, and sometimes, you know, I get labeled a political comedian, and that is sometimes a dirty word.
Yeah.
Is that something that, I mean, I know that you've definitely faced that at times during your career, but is that something that you still face regularly? And how did you kind of overcome that to become...
Well, you know, I, as I explained yesterday, I write songs about things that piss me off, basically. Sometimes that's politics, sometimes that's relationships. But basically, I write songs about things that piss me off, and I come out in the dark with you and sing them. And when everybody applauds, I don't feel so bad about them. Now, the knock-on effect of that with people who hear my records, they because so few people do politics, they lock onto the political aspects of it. It's not really political, it's more kind of topical.
Mm-hmm.
I want to write about stuff that's happening now. And so that topicality makes what I do, in some people's view, dangerous. Don't ask why. You know, spreading the word about an issue should be dangerous. I would have thought in terms of freedom of speech it would be what you'd want to do. But so, yeah, you do get marginalised, but you have to work, you know, make sure you're finding ways to work around that. The real problem comes not in being labelled a political songwriter, but being dismissed as a political songwriter. So people saying, oh, I don't want to hear Billy Bragg, it'll all be politics. It's not all politics. Life isn't all politics. But it's part of it, and I'm going to talk about it. So that's the problem. It's more the people who dismiss me as a political songwriter that are a problem.
So, speaking of which, you were outspoken in regards to a lot of the phone hacking scandals, which there were some problems in your country as well as here in the United States. So I wanted to ask you, especially since you have a relationship with The Guardian, what were your feelings when you first found out about what happened to their offices when the authorities destroyed some of their information?
Yeah, that's not good. I mean, you know, I think we, you know, freedom of the press is an absolute key aspect of a civil society. And anything that infringes on that is dangerous. However, I do think that there is a case to be made for backing up the laws on how our press operate with legislation, because I think you must have some form of accountability. So I'm against the government coming in and shutting down a story because it embarrasses them, but I am in favour of being able to take someone like Rupert Murdoch to court and hold him responsible for the things that his newspapers do. So it's a, you know, I realise in the United States of America under your First Amendment, that kind of idea is troublesome, the idea of having legislation to control the press. But in my country, we believe that you're not free if you can't hold people to account. And that's not just politicians, that's also people who have economic, social power as well. You want to hold those people to account as well. So that's why we're looking at ways of having a free press backed up by a legislative rules, so that when people like Rupert Murdoch do bend the self-regulation out of shape, there's something that can come in and pull them up to account.
So it's a free press, but misinformation will be held accountable for the good of the populace.
Well, you know, I think it's not so much about the nature of the information that we have a problem with, it's how they get it.
Okay.
And how it's, you know, what they believe to be newsworthy. You know, when it's just really, you know, going through people's, invading people's privacy. We have strong views on privacy in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So the one other thing I wanted to bring up, you spoke about healthcare, which was great, by the way.
Thank you.
And you know, a lot of people just believe, from a fundamental standpoint, that you know, in order for a democratic experiment to work, people need to have food in their bellies, a roof over their head, and of course, access to a doctor, regardless of their ability to pay.
Yeah.
And a lot of us in the States do feel that way, but apparently not enough do. And part of the reason for that is because, you know, the word, you know, socialized is often demonized in our corporate media and stuff like that. But then in your country, in older democratic experiment, you kind of are doing much better in that regard. So, so when do you think... when do you think like this will come around? Like, was there ever a point?
You know, in the United States of America, football means something completely different from what it means in England, right?
Right.
Completely different. And unfortunately, socialism means something different in America than what it does in the UK and Europe. I am a socialist, and I don't believe that socialism is worth the name unless it is at heart a form of organized compassion. And when people ask me what kind of society I want to live in, I don't say I want to live in a socialist society or anything. I say I want to live in a compassionate society. And what I mean by that is that the rights of the individual are sacrosanct, but unless each individual is the recipient of free healthcare, free education, decent affordable housing and proper pensions, only the rich and powerful will get to express their individuality and the rest of us will be exploited by them. So that, to me, is the basis for a fair and compassionate society. It's also the definition of socialism.
Thank you very much. I think that's a good spot. Thank you again so much
for
squeezing me in, Billy Bragg. Best
of
luck.
You're a very persistent fella, and, you know, and rightly so, because you got the interview that you were after, and I'm glad we were able to do this.
Absolutely.
And that Thai restaurant I saw you in last night was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We really enjoyed it. I told my girlfriend as we were leaving, there must have been something in the water that everybody that enjoys punk rock and was in Nashville had a craving for Thai. So.
The best curry, it's the best curry you can get in America.
There you go.